to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening out there. This is Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach and ADHD Coach Jeff Copper, and I'm happy to say we've got Dr. Russell Barkley in the house tonight. And our topic is ADHD, the gift or curse debate with Dr. Russell Barkley. For our fans out there, you might recall that we did a similar show on this back in December with my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. In that particular show, she asked me a question about my own issues, which gave me pause and actually kind of led to this show. Only this show is a little bit more in-depth than the last one. We talk a little bit about stigma and some other things, but we'll get into that in a second. Today is Wednesday, June the 26th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have some announcements to go through real quick. First, the Attention Deficit Disorder Association Conference is being revived. The last one was back in 2008. It is scheduled for this July 18th through the 21st. It'll be in Detroit, Michigan. For more information on that, go to add.org. Also, if you go to that, make sure you go to the talent show. I was at the last one back in 2008. It was absolutely amazing. Also, for our chat audience out there, their annual conference is going to be in the Washington, D.C. area, November the 7th through the 9th. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. Our usual announcements, Attention Talk Video is a part of the Attention Talk Network, which would include Attention Talk Video and Attention Talk News. For more information on both of those, go to those URLs, attentiontalkvideo.com and attentiontalknews.com. The video segment is it's a talk show where I just interview experts in a little bit shorter segments in the radio. And Attention Talk News is a subscription-based kind of a newsletter, if you will, that takes integrates printed articles from guest writers, other audio podcasts, and video interviews. So I think that is all the announcements we have right now. Again, we're very lucky tonight to have Dr. Barkley on our show. Notice that we've had him on twice before, and we actually had to pre-tape the show due to his very busy schedule. If you're interested, we do reference two shows that we did with him in the past. One is his Executive Function Deficit Disorder Construct. That was back in, I think, March the 21st of 2012. And then we also had a show that we did with him on emotion in March of 2011. Also, a big part of the show is an interview that we did with Dr. Stephen Henshaw on stigma. I think that was the end of March, beginning of April, 2013. So with that, I think that you'll really, really enjoy this. Put a lot of time and effort in on this, and we get into the gift-cursed debate in great detail and try to circle some things. So without any further ado, we'll run the tape. We hope you enjoy the show. We're here today with Dr. Russell Barkley, who's a world-renowned authority on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, having spent his entire professional career studying ADHD and its diagnosis, assessment, and management. He's received numerous citations for excellence in his research and opinions on ADHD and is highly esteemed by other professionals in this field. He received his PhD in 1977 in clinical psychology at Bowling Green State University in Ohio and received the Distinguished Dissertation Award for his research on the effects of medication on children with ADHD. He's the author of numerous books, including such ones as Taking Charge of Adult ADHD, ADHD and the Nature of Self-Control, Defiant Teens, a Clinician's Manual for Assessment and Family Intervention, Taking Charge of ADHD, that's the revised edition, The Complete Authoritative Guide for Parents, Your Defiant Child, 8 Steps to Better Behavior, second edition, Your Defiant Teen, 10 Steps to Resolve Conflict and Rebuild Your Relationship. You can find all these books and many, many more, specifically some that are targeted towards clinicians, along with a bio and a contact button at Dr. Barkley's website at russellbarkley.org. With that, Dr. Barkley, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back again, Jeff. Thanks so much.
We always appreciate your time. Now, this has been an interesting show, and I hope that I'm not trying to get too much accomplished here, but there's a lot of perspectives and concepts and some other interviews that we've done with some other people that I think kind of tie into this, and I'm hopeful that we can bring all this stuff together in a way that it really makes a lot of sense. And I want to tee things up. You know, Dr. Barkley, you and I did a show about 2 years ago on emotions and ADHD. And at the time, you made a really good case why emotions are very much a part of ADHD. And I have to say that I think that this particular conversation, is ADHD a gift or is it a curse, is very emotionally charged, particularly in this community. It's a good topic, but also for the people in this community. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. As I travel and speak with a number of my professional colleagues and others, there's no question that there seems to be a great deal of polarization around this issue. And so I'm glad that you chose to focus your show on it.
Yep. And I'm going to talk about a little bit in more detail, but I want to preface this a little bit by saying, and this is going to get to some things about my own particular issues later, but when I look at this debate, is ADHD a gift or a curse, for lack of better terms, what I hear in the background is there's a lot of stigma is kind of the root of this. I mean, certainly it would be nice to say ADHD is a gift and kind of destigmatize it, but that's just my thoughts and perspectives. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it does, in the sense that you are trying to relieve the suffering of people and to reduce the harm from any disorder they have. And in so doing, one way of helping them with their suffering is to reframe their disorder so that it's, you know, less of a stigma, less of a disorder, less of of something to be ashamed or embarrassed or humiliated about it. And I think if helping them to reframe it benefits them in that way. You know, I don't think that there's any harm, but I think we have to be careful in trying to help people cope with a diagnosis, as you are trying to do, and trying to portray the disorder as really a benefit that conveys something to the people who possess it that is not possessed by the rest of the public. And I think there are some definite liabilities to that particular point of view. So I think in terms of trying to help people accept and cope with a diagnosis, there's probably no harm. But if you portray it as representing the status of the scientific literature, that there's something great about having this disorder that people who don't have it just can't benefit from, I think that's mistaken.
Well, we did an interview with Dr. Stephen Henshaw not that long ago, and I actually saw him in his keynote address at the 2012 CHAD conference, and he talked about stigma and language matters. Labeling leads to prejudging, discrimination, and ultimately to stigma, and certainly who wants to be stigmatized? But in this debate, to me, so many people want to destigmatize it and call it a gift, but on the other side of it, I've heard you say, you know, listen, ADHD is no gift, and you make, an exceptionally valid point. How can you call it a gift and then turn around and ask for accommodations? It just doesn't work that way.
No, it certainly doesn't. And, in fact, it comes across not just as hypocritical but as destructive to 20 to 30 years of efforts to gain access to accommodations, entitlements, and so on, for people with a legitimate disorder. So that, in fact, brings up one of several downsides to this notion that there may be a gift here that people need to be quite careful about. So let me just clarify that people understand what we're talking about, because usually when there's a disagreement like this within the field, it in part stems from a failure to define the terms that you're using. And so I want to be very clear, when I say that ADHD is no gift, what I'm referring to here is that there is no evidence in any research whatsoever in the thousands of studies that have been done on ADHD that people with ADHD have some trait or ability or potential or attribute that is a benefit beyond what we see in the general population. In other words, they possess something that is above average, above normal, mm-hmm. that the normal or typical population doesn't have. That is what I'm saying is not true. If that's what you mean by a gift, that you've been blessed with something that typical people don't have, then, of course, that's not the case. And we've never, on hundreds of measures that have been used in studies, from cognitive abilities to personality to academic achievement to occupational functioning, driving, marriage, child rearing, social skills, I mean, you name the domain, we've looked at it, and in none of those areas does ADHD come out being better than what we see in the general population. So that's the idea we're trying to lay to rest here. Now, there could be some other interpretations of what we mean by a gift, and that's where you and I can perhaps have some discussion around just what benefit might someone who has the disorder find in meeting the challenges of the disorder.
And I want to highlight the word challenges. We'll come back to that in a second. But I want to kind of just touch base. You know, Dr. Barkley, one of the reasons I was honored that you came on, and one of the reasons why I thought that you'd be particularly good, and you actually got up at the 2011 CHADD conference with Dr. Hollowell to address this very issue, because in this process, you've been speaking from the science side of it and the evidence side, from normative data, composite-type numbers, and as you've elicited, there's nothing that's there. In a weird sense, to me, you've been stigmatized kind of as Dr. Evil on this particular topic.
Yes, I have.
Just as a result of some of this stuff, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show to talk about this is in part to address this head on, because I don't think that we can call it a gift and ask for accommodations, but at the same time, I don't think that you're getting your due by being casted as Dr. Evil on this. You're just looking at the data and saying the data is clear. It's no gift. However, we are going to come back to that challenges thing that you pointed out just a second ago.
Well, I hope so.
In this total, you did get on stage with Dr. Hollowell at the 2011 CHADD conference to address this, and you talked about, you know, as a researcher, you look at the data this way, but Dr. Hollowell got up there, and he's, for lack of a better term, he's been like cast as the poster child as a gift, and it was great because he got up there and he made it clear, you know, this is not something you'd wrap up and give to a president, but he spoke to hope.
Yes.
And the role it plays on an individual level. And what that struck me is on the individual level, hope is the fuel that drives resiliency, an important part of the process. But as he said, it shouldn't be confused as a gift. Hope is just that motivational thing to help people pursue and move forward.
Yes, and that's very important. As you pointed out just a few moments ago, in helping people to understand and to cope with the challenges that present them, the installation of hope for people is extraordinarily beneficial. I think we have to be careful not to make it sound as if ADHD is something beneficial to have, not just for the reason you mentioned, that it invites a loss of credibility and almost an invitation to hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also, if it's taken too far, in other words, there's nothing wrong with the person with ADHD, it's everybody around you that's the
mm-hmm.
problem, it could really wind up undercutting the motivation that's necessary to rise to the challenge of meeting and overcoming your disorder,
mm-hmm.
and instead blaming everybody else around you as being the problem. And certainly that was one thing that we spoke about very briefly at the CHADD meeting, is this going the opposite direction and removing the motivation to change.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of takes us back to everybody, just to kind of, from my perspective, is you have this, we don't like the stigmas. We talked to Dr. Henshaw, is that we're not really making a lot of progress. They've done surveys for decades, and we're really not moving a lot forward on destigmatizing mental health disorders. But as he talked about, is if we can begin to humanize it a little bit, and people can understand the challenges and stuff that you face, is that people have some empathy, and it actually can kind of help us move forward. And so when I come back to the question, well, it's not a gift. We can't really call it a gift, but we don't like calling it a curse either.
Yeah.
So what do we do here? Because going back to what I've learned from you is ADHD is a self-regulation issue, and attention, emotion, and I think bodily movement are things that you need to regulate. So it's a particularly charged atmosphere. So we're stuck in this space because we all kind of want to be right, but at the same time, it's just kind of quagmire. And so what I'd like to touch base with you on is the challenge side of it.
Sure. Sure. Well, we can certainly do that because, as you pointed out, in this effort to almost cast this debate as a sporting event,
mm-hmm.
I think both people like Dr. Hollowell, who is a friend of mine, their positions have been so polarized and made so extreme as to almost look Pollyannish, that, you know, that Dr. Hallowell believes that, you know, this is a blessing. And he certainly doesn't believe that, as he pointed out at the CHAD conference. And likewise, you know, my position has been grossly misrepresented as someone who seeks to over-pathologize the disorder. And some people have even gone so far as to claim that I do that at the behest of the pharmaceutical companies that from time to time I do consult with in order to help them, you know, continue to expand their market share, you know, and nothing could be further from the truth. But the fact is that, you know, people love a good sporting event like the sensationalism, and I think it just misrepresents both of our positions. So I'm certainly glad that you have pointed that out earlier. I think when we get into addressing the challenges, that helps for people to keep in mind that when I say that ADHD is no gift, as I said earlier, it means that across all people with the disorder, we cannot find a single area of asset or benefit that the disorder conveys to people that typical people don't have. So let's just put that aside. That's not happening. It's not like if you have ADHD, you are more creative, you are more intelligent, you are more gifted, you are more comedic or humorous, or you are more capable of demonstrating your artistic talent than other people. We don't find any of that. And that's been some of the common misconceptions about ADHD. They're not just gifted, misunderstood lateral thinkers. But on the other hand, you know, what we just talked about are called main effects in research. We compare one group of people, like adults with ADHD, to typical people. In none of those comparisons do we find the ADHD group has any advantage whatsoever. If anything, we find that they have multiple difficulties with deficits or impairments in their life, and that speaks to the seriousness of the disorder that people need to appreciate. But it doesn't mean, Jeff, that there can't be an interaction of the disorder with gifted traits that you possess for other reasons. You can be a gifted artist without attributing it to your ADHD. You can be very intelligent. You can be a performer or a musician or an actor like Ty Pennington, or a great athlete like Michael Phelps, or a great golfer like Payne Stewart was. All of these people were, you know, highly accomplished individuals and have been, but in none of these instances is their level of expertise in their specialty due to their ADHD. They would have had that whether they had ADHD or not.
And that's,
but having their trait and their gifted abilities with their ADHD, the interaction of those two could well lead to some very unique combinations that you wouldn't just see in everybody with the disorder. And so, you know, perhaps Ty Pennington wouldn't be as good a host on Extreme Home Makeover or on his newer program on travels across America. And perhaps Michael Phelps certainly wouldn't have been the person he is today, such an accomplished swimmer. He would have been a great swimmer, but the interaction of the two and the way he had to organize his environment around him in order to cope with and compensate for his disorder might well have made a very unique combination for him.
And that's Dr. Marco, I need to run to a break real quick, but when we come back, I'd like to kind of delve into that a little bit and actually look at some like kind of examples of how that might manifest. But before we do, again, if anybody out there is interested in learning more about Dr. Barkley, purchasing his book, which, by the way, on his website, there's not just books, there's papers. You can see a list of his where he's speaking, among other things. For all that information, just go to russellbarkley.org, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a time timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. Barkley talking about the ADHD gift curse debate. Dr. Barkley, before the break, you were using words like cope and compensate and stuff, and I want to throw two concepts out on the table. One of them is a little bit easier, and I look at it this way, is if I were to lose my vision, I just lost one sense. I'm not so sure that makes my ears are better than anybody else's, but I now need to compensate in the world due to the lack of vision. So I might rely more on my sense of smell or rely more on my ears, as I say, pay attention to it more, because that energy that I would be used to look at things visually, I might now have to funnel that energy and more focus on sound. To me, that's an illustration of how losing my eyesight is certainly not a gift, but I'm having to compensate, and I might develop a keener sense of sound because I'm paying more attention to it. What are your thoughts on that conceptually as an illustration of how you can have a problem in an area, and it doesn't mean you're gifted somewhere else, but you're having to rely on it more so you might develop it more?
Yes, I think that's quite the case for a number of people. Again, they may well have been good at a particular activity. Let's take athletics, for instance, mm-hmm. or comedians. Mm-hmm. These are areas in which we find adults with ADHD may be more likely to self-select mm-hmm. into these kinds of occupations. Or we could just as easily speak about performing artists or musicians. But mm-hmm. the point is that having ADHD, having to struggle with it, having to overcome it, to compensate and get treatment for it, may well lead them not only to choose these professions, but to try to become even more expert at them than other people who might not apply themselves or need to apply themselves so strongly or forcefully to succeed in that area. And as a result, there could be an interaction of having a disorder with going out of the way to, as you say, compensate for some of the deficits. And in so doing, having forced yourself to rise to a challenge that you wouldn't have done otherwise and that other people don't necessarily have to do. And in so doing, you might, in that particular area, actually be a little bit more successful than other people who didn't have that challenge to face. I mean, if we look at Howie Mandel, for instance, who mm-hmm. claims to have ADHD, would he have been as good a comedian if he hadn't been somewhat impulsive and scattered and a little more mm-hmm. free in his thinking and less inhibited? And it's possible he might not have been quite so good. So, did ADHD make him a comedian? No. He already had the attributes necessary, whether it was being the class clown earlier in life or so on. But by being a little more ADHD-like and a little more impulsive, it's quite possible that he then capitalized on that to be a bit more spontaneous and lateral in his thinking and in the jokes that he was writing. So, and in so doing, he might well have succeeded where other comedians might not have because of that unique interaction of the two. So the ADHD wasn't a gift, but mm-hmm. by combining it with the gifts that he already possessed mm-hmm. and rising to the challenge of meeting that, he might well have succeeded where previously he might not have.
It's I'm glad you mentioned that way, and particularly Howie Mandel, because we're going to get back to the end of it, and that's one of the things of humanizing, to destigmatize the mental health condition to begin with, but we'll come back to that. Dr. Barker, I'll tell you that I have dyslexia and I have a learning disability, and I had all the tutors growing up. It was always frustrating. I barely got to college. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure I would have gone had I not been an athlete. And when I got to college, all of a sudden I found myself, without all those support systems, taking sociology of sport my first semester, and the reading was massive. I just couldn't keep up with it, and I was having to figure out literally what I was going to do. And I got to the point where I would read the first sentence of each paragraph, which there's a lot of run-on sentences in psychology books.
Yeah.
So I cut it down to the first line of each paragraph, and I began to kind of not read the words, but pay attention to the gist of what I thought they were trying to convey. And it's the only way that I could keep up with the reading. And then I really came in contact where I had to do my first serious research paper. And right, being overwhelmed with it all, I was just thinking about this vision of having gone to the library, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, if I could go interview a subject matter expert, I could bypass all that stuff, and I could use their quotes and footnote them in my paper. And it was a life sentence for me to have stumbled on some of those, and I went through college in a lot of life having to rely on this sense of paying attention to what's really going on at a higher level to try to figure out how I was going to accomplish what I was going to do, many times in a very different way. And I'll fast forward, when I got into the coaching business, everybody's like, you got to write a book, you got to do a blog. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. And this radio show is a direct result of, hey, that's not the way I do it. I'm going to have to focus on how I do as a compensatory strategy, if you will, to do it. And now it's fun because I'm not so sure I'm any good at it, but I stand out a little bit among people because it's unique and novel. And I would have never done this if reading and writing were easy for me. I can tell you, I'm sure I would never not have even tried this.
Yeah, well, I think that is a great illustration of another point that we can go into, because mm-hmm. what it shows is that people with particular disorders not only need to enhance the areas of or the suite of abilities that aren't affected by the disorder to compensate for it, but they need to engage in a specialized kind of niche picking, as we call it. They need to look around them and see, in what environments am I, given this unique combination of my ADHD and my other traits, am I likely to be less impaired and perhaps more successful? And it winds up taking you down certain pathways in your life that you certainly would not have chosen had the ADHD been there, and probably not been quite as good at. So there is, something to be said for this kind of concentrated and intentional niche picking, where you really have to think through what your strengths and weaknesses are and then look at particular contexts that are more likely to be supportive of them than others. I mean, it's quite likely that had Michael Phelps chosen to go into door-to-door sales or, you know, some other occupation, he wouldn't have been nearly as good at it as choosing to stay within, you know, the swimming pool and the swimming environment. And as a result, he chose the right niche for someone with his disability, and the interaction of the two might well have helped him be a bit more successful. Let's also not forget something that I think you were implying, Jeff, in your mm-hmm. comments, but perhaps you can speak to it more, and that is that there may be an interaction with a very supportive context that you find yourself in, that if you weren't in that, you might well have failed substantially. You might well be in much more serious difficulties. And I'm thinking here, for instance, the late golfer Payne Stewart mm-hmm. Is a good example. He was an ADHD child. He was treated with Ritalin for years, but he then chose to move into sports and specifically into golf because he had a number of strengths within this area. And he wasn't doing as well in other areas because of mm-hmm. his ADHD. And he probably would have gone on to be sort of a journeyman golfer, not very well recognized, yep. and certainly he might not have won the U.S. Open. But he met a woman at a party who was a very stable individual, very organized, very much in love with him, but who was willing to create a context for him, a family support system for him, which helped him to succeed profoundly. And before his death, he attributed a great deal of his success to having met his wife and having found someone who accepted his ADHD, but then held him up to certain challenges and mm-hmm. compelled him to be a more successful person while structuring the environment around him so that he had a safety net and a support system. And I think you kind of alluded to that certain support systems around you can, I think, provide that net underneath you so that you don't necessarily fall through the cracks and fail as other people might have, and may well go on to succeed where you wouldn't have otherwise.
Well, everybody, I swear to God, I didn't. This is unscripted, but there's two things in that. Number one, you brought up the concept of niche picking. You talked about the concept of context and Payne Stewart and having that support stuff. But there's also something else I'd like to bring in. I'll bring us all together in a second, and that is being niche picking and then all of a sudden bumping into a context that makes some sense to you. And what that looks like for me individually is, as I have described in my prior examples, is for me in moving forward in my life, it's been to try to pay attention at a higher level and try to figure out what the goal is and trying to figure out how I was going to get there, which wasn't necessarily the same as everybody else. When I started coaching, I got into this, and I gravitated to ADHD coaching relatively easy because, I mean, at the end of the day, we all have challenges, and I was having to deal with my own all my life. And I had this thing out there that I was doing. I couldn't articulate. I knew that my approach was a little bit differently. And voila, I stumble into your EFDD presentations going back a couple years. And ultimately, we had you on the show about a year ago talking about that particular construct, and specifically the level one thinking tools, which we covered, which everybody, you have to go back in, I think it was March 21st of 2012, but he talks about these are the thinking tools in your construct that we have that only the individual can observe what you're paying attention to, because it's kind of inside of your head. But you talk about inhibition and awareness kind of come together. In order to inhibit something, you have to become aware of it. And then you kind of look at your rearview mirror in history to grab information. And then you talk to yourself, which is the language you direct back on yourself. Then you have emotions. And then you have play, which you talk about externalizing. And as odd as that sounds, when we were having that interview, things were clicking for me left and right. We were using different words from coaching and what you were describing. I would use the word like mirroring back, and you were using like mind's mirror. But
yes.
It was interesting to me because as you began to describe that, things started going left and right. Ding, 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 ding. I was making some sense, and people who have listened to the show have heard me refer to it, because as a coach, so often I'll sit and listen to somebody and I'll ask them, you know, tell me about what you're having some difficulties with, and I'll listen to some of those things. And effectively, I feel like many times I'm the external mind's mirror, listening to them tell about some of their challenges and asking them when they did something right. And then identifying and saying, I see it worked for you here, which is not something that they've noticed before. And as they begin to see that pattern, the language that they direct back on themselves begins to change, because they're able to see this different way that's kind of working for them, and that externalization kind of moves them forward. And all this might be kind of confusing to everybody, but it was weird to me how it felt like a glove. But then what was really powerful for me is all of a sudden I was able to describe, when I'm working with people, I don't pay attention to the tactical type things like procrastination, chunk it down. I actually say, tell me about a bunch of things you procrastinate, and I try to look for commonalities and patterns. So we're ADD or many often it's repetitive, boring, routine type things they can't do. When they're unclear as to what to do, they don't know how long it's going to take them to do something, when they've got to confront somebody with something. And I say, you might think you know what to do, like I need to go on the internet to go do that, but you don't know where you're going to find it. You don't know how long it's going to take, and you don't necessarily know what it looked like. So many times they'll go rearrange their sock drawer to feel like they got something else done. But I'm describing that level that I've fought at all my entire life, because I've had to rely on the simplicity of it. So often when I'm working with people, if it's confrontation, then we talk about how they're going to get past confrontation. And if we can resolve that, many times the procrastination takes care of itself.
Yes.
And there's this level of stuff that I see, even like organization. People come to me and say, well, I need to get organized. And it dawned on me a couple of years ago, well, organization, it just needs a home. It might not necessarily mean your shoes make it up into your closet. They might be in a pile at the door. But if you know where they are, that's their home. Maybe you should just put them in a basket and kind of formalize it.
That's right, and that's the point. Yeah, I think so. And part of that, as we haven't gone into in much detail, is learning how to accept your disability and some of its characteristics, and then readjust your lifestyle to that very characteristic. I mean, you can minimize how impairing a symptom is by just changing the environment around the symptom. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the symptom, in this case, you know, disorganization, has gone away, but you've restructured the environment, you've created some accommodation so that it's not as impairing to you as it would otherwise have been. And I think that's a great example here of where the disorder forces you to do things in a different way, that other people don't have to do it that way. But by doing it that way, you're less impaired by it. And you wouldn't have chosen to do it that way if you didn't have to.
And bringing this full circle, as you talked about niche picking, I certainly enjoyed your construct because it put it into a way that I can I can go into more detail, but I can articulate it now and illustrate kind of what I do a little bit better. And then there's some adaptation things that I've done, and I would like to stress, I don't think I'm any more gifted or talented than anybody else in this. It's just what I've had to rely on much of my life to get by. And so we took a small stab at this show back in December, Dr. Barkley with my co-host, and she asked me, said, well, would you be willing to give back your dyslexia and learning disability? And it actually kind of caught me for a pause for a second because I was like, wait a second, I'm saying it's not a gift, but would I want to give it back? And because of the challenges I faced, I'm not so sure I would have stumbled into some of these, and I'm not so sure I'd want to give it back now.
Yes, yeah, that's right. You know, it's interesting you say that. A friend of mine, Dr. Orrin Mason, who has written a book on adult ADHD, because he is an adult with ADHD, and yet he is also an accomplished physician. He said, he put it beautifully, I think, when he said that rising to the challenge of a disorder forces you to meet a level of struggle and accomplishment that he called heroic, that other people never have to face in their life. And a good example of that is if you look at people who come back from war, who may have lost limbs, had amputations, yep. Or if you look at some of the people like the woman runner who lost her foot in the Boston terrorist attack and was a dancer, but who now is applying herself with the help of others to not only returning to dance, but trying to be even better at it. Those are challenges that you would not have had or risen to meet in your life. And sometimes people have argued that you're actually a better person as a result of that than you would have been. Not only yep. can you appreciate other people's attempts to overcome their disorders better than you would have been very complacent without your own particular disorder, but you may well, in fact, be someone of stronger character, someone of more compassion, someone yep. who is better able to help other people with disabilities because of having risen to that challenge. So that was a point that I hadn't seen, that Orrin in his own struggle said yep. That he felt like you, he wouldn't necessarily give the disorder back. It's not something he would wish on anybody else, and he certainly wished he didn't have it. But having had it and had to meet the challenges it posed for him, he felt that he was a much stronger person because of it.
Absolutely. And we need to run to break real quick, but when we come back, I think we've got it all teed up to kind of bring this all together in a way that I was hopeful that we could do. Let's run to break. Again, if you need to contact Dr. Barkley, learn more about him, get his books, find where he's speaking. I think he's got a couple classes. Go to russellbarkley.org, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Barkley talking about the ADHD gift curse debate. We talked about it, the stigma side of the debate at the beginning. We talked about challenges and stuff after the first break. Dr. Barkley, now I want to kind of bring it all together because I really think there's some real common ground here. The notion on my side is that this debate kind of really centers on stigma. that people are kind of moving away from it. In my interviews with Dr. Henshaw, the notion of to destigmatize it is to humanize it and to reveal it. And we've talked about the challenges. I've shared with my challenges, and one of my notions is, or as you were talking about, is this sometimes you're dealt with adversity and you've got to rise above that. And to me, this all kind of comes together that this can be framed out in a positive way if we use hope as the fuel that for those with these particular issues use as resiliency to rise above some of this stuff, to find their ways in doing that. And if we begin to tell these stories, these very real stories of the challenges these people have faced and the things that they've been able to accomplish, we've now humanized what's kind of going on to the point that people can actually admire the people for what they've done and what they've accomplished, bring in empathy, and thereby destigmatizing it in a way. We're not calling it a gift. We're not calling it a curse. We're just using hope to fuel the drive to move past the challenges and holding that up as something for people to marvel at as a way to minimize stigma. Can you share your thoughts on that concept?
Well, I think that's exactly the case, because, first of all, we don't want to deny that there is a disorder there, because to do that, first of all, flies in the face of 240 years of research and tens of thousands of papers, but more importantly, it defines away the very disorder itself, and as a result, you could wind up losing insurance coverage and ADA accommodations, and some people's Social Security disability, and school children would lose special education.
Yep.
So you're quite right. Let's not run down the hallway screaming what a great thing, what great gift ADHD is to have. Where I think there is room for hope and discussion here is, having conceded that there is a disorder here, all right, now what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
And what are the treatments that you need to access? And what are the environments and the niches you need to be looking at to capitalize on your strengths, your talents that other people may not have? And that is the challenge, I think, that you're talking about that instills hope. It does require, in my opinion, first of all, that you have to go through a grief reaction. You have to acknowledge this loss of, for better term, normalcy, but this loss of what other people take for granted. Life isn't going to be as easy for you in certain ways as it is for people who don't necessarily have ADHD. And as you know, and we've talked about it on your show, some people do experience a grief response to that loss of that view of themselves. But then comes the opportunity to reframe your disorder in such a way, and reframe your view of yourself in such a way that you can rise to meet that challenge. And as you know, the end stage of grieving is acceptance. And you are not going to move on to do something, as you have done with your life, to do something to meet those challenges and to rise to that occasion, if you hadn't accepted your disorder first, because there would be no need to.
Mm-hmm.
You could just walk around saying, there's nothing wrong with me, I don't have to do anything, everything is fine, leave me alone. You know, the people around me are the problem, not me. The other thing I think that's embedded in what you're talking about is, by accepting the diagnosis of ADHD, it does bring into view that this is a neurodevelopmental disorder, as DSM-5 is going to classify it in a few weeks when the new manual comes out for diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And by viewing it that way, it removes it from the realm of moral failure.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, many people with ADHD before their diagnosis often blamed themselves. They viewed it as a character weakness or a particular flaw, or they just couldn't get it together, or they just needed to wake up and smell the coffee, and you know, or they blamed other people around them. But neither blaming others nor viewing yourself as somehow morally flawed or less of a person is helpful. So to me, the diagnosis not only brings with it this potential of hope, but it also allows you to reframe it as the neurodevelopmental, the neurological disorder that it actually is. And then I think you can rise to the challenge of, how do I overcome this limitation that I have been given as a result of my brain and my genes? And that then is the struggle you're talking about that I think can better you as a result of meeting that struggle.
Absolutely. I want to reiterate, you were talking about grief a second ago, and Dr. Barclay, it is so clear to me in my work now, after your your discussions, you know, when I look at ADHD as a self-regulation issue, not an attention issue, so much makes sense. I mean, kids can play computer games all day long. Their issues, they can't regulate and stop playing it. But the emotional side of it, more and more I'm noticing that down-regulation or that desire to kind of go into the dramatic realm and modulating that sometimes goes back to grief is an emotion. And many of those with ADHD, if they just sit down and kind of work their way through it, can realize that is part of this process. And acceptance and down-regulating actually helps them move forward in it because it is very much a part, and I think sometimes more of a challenge for those with ADHD because of the nature of the need to regulate the emotion.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
and as you know, in the wrong environment, that need for external structure and self-regulation, especially over emotions, can become quite destructive if you don't put yourself in the right environment. If you choose to enter into relationships with other people who are having significant self-control problems, if you choose to place yourself in with other, like deviant peer groups that are engaging in antisocial behavior because you're angry that the other people, the more successful people, may have rejected you. If you choose to have an intimate relationship with someone, for instance, who is even more impaired than you are and who wishes to do nothing about it and wishes to drag you down, you know, with them, it can become a downward spiral and not the upward spiral that we're trying to encourage people to embrace and struggle with and overcome the deficits that they have. So I think part of the niche picking, which you were talking about earlier, is this idea. It's not just the niche, the context, or the occupation. It's the people you choose to surround yourself with that can make or break you with this disorder. And so you have to be careful about who you are choosing to associate with, or you can make your disorder worse.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think we've come full circle. We've talked about the stuff in the top. We talked about stigma. It's an emotionally charged topic. Hopefully we've addressed many of the issues to describe the pros and cons, take a look at it for what it is so that those out there can digest it. And my hope is that we can, as a community, kind of come together this and kind of move forward and kind of put this the debate and the whole Dr. Evil behind us, because the facts there really make some sense. And if we can get onto this, accept it, and kind of move forward with it, all the better for everybody else. And so, as always, Dr. Barkley, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
And for our listeners, to learn more about Dr. Barkley, go to russellbarkley.org. And with that, catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.